you like, Ginger.
Good afternoon. I'd like to open the Senate Committee on Education and Workforce Development. I'd start off by announcing that we'll have no work session or action today on Senate Bill 297 or Senate Bill 270. Today, stay in your seats, Senator. I do want to open up a work session on Senate Bill 222. This is the heavily amended dual credits bill we went through last week, and I think we finished it. We did not have all of the proper fiscal documentation in order that we do now, and if you could give us some highlights, Councilor Donovan.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 222, the committee has considered a number of times prior to today, seven times total. We last heard it last week, last Thursday, when Representative Johnson came and discussed his additions to the bill. The bill concerns ESDs. The Dash 5 amendments are the amendments that we're currently working on. That's what the committee is considering today. The Dash 5 amendments require the Oregon Student Access Commission to actually administer a student scholarship fund related to accelerated college credit programs. It mandates that the Oregon Education Investment Board design and implement programs for strategic investments, which is something that Dash 3s did as well. But rather than appropriating funds directly to the OEIB, the funds now go to the Oregon Department of Education and the Oregon Student Access Commission. That was a change made after the end of our Dash 3 discussion. Also, it establishes the Accelerated Learning Committee, which is committee two, report to the legislature on no later than October 1st, 2014, about accelerated credit opportunities. And finally, it does detail the type of credits that may be required beyond 24 total credit hours in high school. It declares an emergency effective immediately and has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means.
So to review, this was this is a very important place personally for us to expand, do more with getting to 40-40-20 to earn, for more high school students to get to college, earn college credits while they're still in high school, therefore making college more affordable, easing the debt burden that we're putting on these students. And to be honest, I was hoping we could go further here, but because of the incredible complexities in funding and assessments in the two worlds of K through 12, community colleges, higher education, we just weren't ready to do that grand design yet, and therefore put in this task force headed by the Chief Education Officer, Rudy Crewe, to look at some of those technical issues surrounding assessments and how to do this in a uniform way, because some places are doing a great job of this, some not so great, and I think that's what the doctor's ordering here is a uniform system so that's no different in Vernonia, Portland, Bend, Roseburg. So we will wait for another day. In the meantime, I think this bill does go a ways to bolster what we're doing. Some of the technical fixes, after a recommendation from our Deputy Superintendent Rob Saxman, will be done by rule, and they're working on that now at the Department of Education, helping teachers, adding more flexibility to teachers who need a master's degree to do this. But sometimes their master's is in education and not math, and therefore they're disqualified from teaching a college credit course in mathematics. So we're working. This is a good bill. I'm looking forward to the grand design we do next session. So with that, I would like to move it on to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Senator Knope.
So we want to remove the Dash 3s?
Yeah, one, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, one note. The committee previously adopted the Dash 3s. The Dash 5s supersede the Dash 3s. The Dash 3s are still attached to this. Procedurally, we'll recede from the Dash 3s, adopt the Dash 5s, and move the amended Dash 5, SB 222-5.
Chair Hess, I move that we reconsider the vote by which the Dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 222, dated March 7, 2013, were adopted.
Senator Knope moves to reconsider the vote by which the committee adopted the Dash 3 amendments. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair Hess, I move to adopt the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 222, dated April 9, 2013.
Senator Knope moves to adopt the Dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 222. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Chair House, I move Senate Bill 222 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 222 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the redirecting of the money to where I think the appropriate places. And I will support sending this to Ways and Means. I just think it's unfortunate that we're once again kind of wrapping OEIB into everything when this is something that could be done by the Department of Ed.
Okay. Further discussion? Seeing none. Is there objection? Seeing none, the motion passes and Senate Bill 222 goes to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you all. And I would like to open up a work session on Senate Bill 643. We finished up that last week, but did not have the financial documents ready. We do now, and I think we're ready to move it to the floor. Senator Knope.
Chair House, I move to adopt the amendments, the dash two amendments, to Senate Bill 643, dated April 9, 2013.
Senator Knope moves to adopt the dash two amendments dated April 9th, 2013. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair House, I move Senate Bill 643 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Rules be rescinded.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 643 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation and that subsequent referral to the Rules Committee be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion passes and the bill is sent to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. We are down to Senator Knope. Would you mind carrying this, sir?
Oh, yes. It was my dream, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
To
Senator
carry this
Knope
bill,
is his dream bill, and he will carry it on the floor. Thank you, sir. We have a request to move along Senate Bill 820 to the Rules Committee with no action or no recommendation. So I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 820.
Chair, I move Senate Bill 820 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules.
Senator Knope moves Senate Bill 820 without recommendation to the Committee on Rules. Is there discussion? Seeing none, is there objection? Seeing none, the motion passes and the measure is sent to the Committee on Rules. All right, we have light duty here today and we have a hearing on a House bill that was sent over here. And I would like to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3296. We have some state legislators who are coming in later in the hour to testify. But in the meantime, I know we have some witnesses who may or may not be here yet. Yes. Let me get the sheet.
Which bill?
Rebecca Ball and Jeff Hawkins.
Or no, this is 3296.
Counselor Dunn, can you give us a quick summary before we get going here?
Sure, my pleasure. Chair Hess, members of the committee, House Bill 2386A comes to us from the House Education Committee on the House floor. It modifies for the purposes of regulating student-athlete agents the definition of athlete agent and agency contract. It expands the application of statutes for agents to include agents representing student-athletes in elementary and secondary schools. It requires agents to notify educational institutions in writing before initiating contact with a student-athlete, and it specifies the form and the process for the notification, and it makes a violation of specified statutes unlawful trade practice.
Okay, thank you. Welcome from the University of Oregon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Haas, Vice Chair Knope, members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Ball, and I represent the University of Oregon. With me is Jeff Hawkins. He's the football director at University of Oregon. He's here to talk to you about this bill. He's the subject matter expert on this bill, but I'm happy to answer any questions as needed. But with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Hawkins.
Chairman Haas, Vice President Knope, Vice Chair Knope, sorry, committee members. My name is Jeff Hawkins, for the record. The senior athletic director for Football Operations Administration in Oregon. I've been there for 12 years now, and I'm here to testify before you about a problem that's really become epidemic that affects all athletes in both college and high school, and even younger, and both male and female. As professional athletes in all sports, their salaries have skyrocketed. We've seen a tremendous growth in the number of agents, otherwise known as sports agents. These agents have powerful economic incentives to form relationships with high school and college student athletes. Unfortunately, they oftentimes use improper methods to do that, and use benefits like cash and cars and bling to put these athletes' education and athletic careers at risk. In response, elected officials have enacted laws in the federal level, SPARTA, on the state level, the Uniform Athlete Agent Act. And the intention of these laws is to protect the student athletes, to create oversight of the agent industry, and to oftentimes police these shadowy interactions between athlete agents and student athletes. The goal of these laws were to standardize registration procedures and record keeping, and to create a fair and practical monitoring disciplinary system. In theory, these laws were to level the playing field for everyone, including the agent. But the very essence of the problem has been the blurred definition of what an agent is. The contract advisor has been that person who negotiates the contract and traditionally identified as the sports agent. But they're now supported by a number of different people. Weight and strength coaches, financial planners, tax advisors, tutors, spiritual advisors, the list goes on and on and on. Within this industry, these folks are called runners. And a runner is a paid service that includes forming relationships with student athletes and directs them towards the agent when it comes time to negotiate that big cash. The problem is that these runners call themselves everything but what they really are. They're agents. And they enable to avoid regulations that are created to protect the student athletes. And increasingly, it's not just the college athlete. It's the high school athlete, and even younger now, because what they do is they prey upon the lack of sophistication of these athletes and their families. The big issue right now is these runners are casting a broad net and touching a lot of student athletes. At Oregon, by our analysis, 82% of our players think they're going to play in the pros. We raise their hands, 82%.
Yeah.
The reality is more like 2.4%. You know, we played in a national championship and we had one player drafted, Casey Matthews. So these runners befriend a lot of these players in hoping to reach out to that 2.4%. That 2.4% end up usually playing briefly in the NFL. It's more of an opportunity than it is a career. And most often they leave the pro ranks with out of degree, no job, and in debt. And that's the root reality. Recently, the NCAA sought to clarify the definition of what an agent is to cover all the bases that I talked about. And it covers the entire spectrum. Essentially, it's those who seek to represent and gain profit. The American Football Coaches Association did a survey of all Division I head football coaches. Out of 124, 117 responded. And 86% agree with this definition. Bill 3296 does two things. First, it makes Oregon statute consistent with the NCAA definition. By doing so, we ensure to be able to regulate anybody who tries to make a buck on a student athlete. that they must contact the institution first. The bill provides clear direction upon who the agent has to contact at the educational institution before making contact there. This creates a level of transparency that's good for everyone, and it keeps them from blurring the lines. 97% of Division I coaches agree with this policy. And secondly, it creates a meaningful enforcement of the law. Currently, enforcement is left to local district attorneys who are left without the resources and time to pursue these types of cases. And although the UAAA has been on the books for well over a decade, and currently 42 states have adopted this, no one has effectively enforced it. Due to the many inconsistencies from state to state. Recently, North Carolina, you might know, had filed charges against an agent and a third party who were funneling cash to their University of North Carolina football players. The case devastated the football program and implicated a dozen athletes. It remains to be seen if these people will ever be convicted, but at least the powers that be have initiated prosecution. Locally, a player at Oregon, was contacted by a runner who gave him a $100 handshake. The guilt-ridden player came up to me afterwards and admitted what he did. He testified before the Attorney General, but nothing ever came of it. What he ended up doing is admitting what he had done wrong and faced the NCAA, and he got penalized for it. There are many cases just like this nationwide. It happens all the time. Never before have we had a chance to create positive change like we do right now, and this bill puts us in the right direction.
Senator Cruz.
Does this get, because you're talking about interscholastic as well, does this get to the people, the paid people that are trying to direct high school players to specific colleges, or is
yes,
that,
yes,
it gets to that as well?
It does. Okay. It covers the whole spectrum,
okay.
Every level, and boys and girls, men and women.
Could you give me a hypothetical of what this would prevent on a state level, say the difference with and without this change?
Well, what oftentimes happens, and I'm hoping this gives you a good example, is that that they'll have somebody that will reach out to a player, and if they don't go through the university or the high school or the elementary school first, then at least it gives us a tool to go back and prosecute that. It does not prevent people from doing their job. They just have to register.
Okay.
And Chair Haas, I think that's an important part, that it defines who needs to register. So right now, the group of runners don't feel like they need to register with the university, reach out to the athletic director or the principal, depending upon if it's high school or college. And this defines a clear definition of who does and that they need to. So it enables coaches to monitor the process.
Okay. Now, in the case of the guy with the $100 bill, there were NCAA violations there.
Correct.
So you're saying we need state law instead in addition to those NCAA rules?
What we need to do is to adopt what the definition. It took many years for the NCAA to adopt the definition that they now have, which was a year ago February. What they identified exactly this wide spectrum of it's no longer the old days. They get creative. And by putting it like we did, by adopting that, we make it a uniform agreement on what they define that is.
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, the fact that he self-disclosed puts him at jeopardy with the NCAA, but the person who committed the crime walks. But with this, it would give you action against that person.
Correct.
Okay.
The player that came before us admitted to what he did. We immediately went to the NCAA within an hour, and they levied a decision, which was he had to pay the $100 to charity, and he had to miss a football game.
Yeah. Mm.
And nothing happened to the winner.
Right. So.
And you did take it to the Attorney General.
Yes.
Senator Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So is the only enforcement including the Unfair Trade Practices Act?
Right now, the enforcement goes to a local district attorney, and it's under the Department of Education, and there's just we haven't found the tools to be able to go out and to do enforcement, and that seems to be the problem.
I see what you're trying to do, and I support that, but I'm not sure this gets at it. If the enforcement is the using the Unfair Trade Practices Act, you would have to have a pattern established to go there, I think, unless there's a private right of action. Does this include a private right of action?
My understanding is that it goes to the Justice Department.
Well, that's who enforces that, but the Justice Department can't represent an individual Oregonian. They can only, under the UTPA, they enforce a pattern of practices. So they'd have to, in their mind, they would have to establish a pattern that existed. Maybe they can do that or not. I'm not arguing with you. I'm just trying to think. I'm not sure.
Over my head.
I understand what you're trying to do. I'm not sure that this works, but maybe it's the best we can get.
And Chair Haas, Senator Beyer, I believe that Speaker Courtney is going to come in and speak more to the oversight and how the Department of Justice will, the process that will go through when they do bring something.
The other piece is I think I see the definition, but it's sort of an eye of the beholder definition, so it'd be hard to prosecute. Worth a try.
Yeah, it would be a try because right now we're not doing anything about it, and it's happening all over the country.
I suspect, as you being in the business, you can see it. It's sort of one of those, you know it when you see it, but proving it is difficult.
In some cases, it's really not. And we had as I mentioned, this young man that came forward, we had a poster child. Hmm. We had someone who testified and said, I did this, and this person gave me money.
Hmm.
We did nothing about it.
So, Mr. Chair, I'm curious. I haven't been involved in this, but I've had some friends who have kids that are good athletes. They're not the football players and that, but tennis players or volleyball players. And they tell me that what you often have to do to get noticed, particularly if you're from a small school, is you have to hire somebody to help you develop a reel that shows your skills and ability and log that and be able to send that off. Is that kind of person who would do that for a fee? Is that the kind of person who would be the what you call them here?
Yeah, films are important on every level in every sport. But and you might hire someone to shoot the film and stuff like that. But as a Division I football administrator, you know, we do our own research. Mm-hmm. You know, these people that go out there and that's a way they make a living. Is they make a buck by going out there and convincing that the families, naive families and players, that we can get you somewhere when they really can't. The homework that we do going out there, it regardless of what sport it is, everyone, all coaches do their own homework. We don't rely upon them.
It's just a whole list of practices.
Senator Roblin.
I think most of the coaches in high schools will make that little film for their people to send out too. So they have the film, and you don't always have to hire somebody. You just need to work with your coach and do whatever.
Very true. And it's just a niche they try to find themselves in.
And just since I'm here and since Jeff's here, I just want to say give my regards to my old student, Mark Helfrich, when you see him.
Oh, okay, I will.
So he's been fun and a really great person from our Coos Bay community. So thank you. I had to do that.
You didn't have to, but you wanted to.
Exactly.
Okay. You knew Steve Prefontaine, too.
Yeah, I actually didn't know him well, but I was at a couple of the right track meets he was at in Coos Bay.
Actually, I knew him well, competed.
That's true.
He competed. He's great on all through high school. Same age, same class.
And you beat him how often?
When he was a middle distance runner, I could beat him. When he decided to become a long distance runner, it was game over.
You never apparently heard of Crazy Legs Cruz. Thank you for coming up, and maybe if you could stand by, we have some other legislators who are here. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Courtney.
It's very hard. I've been saving all my hard questions for this panel.
Yeah.
Oh. Yep. Do we need to swear this witness in, or? No? Okay. Chair Haas.
Chair Canope. Senator Beyer. Senator Cruz and Senator Oberlin. My name is Peter Courtney. I live in Salem. That's here. And I represent District 11, which is here, as well as Jervis and Woodburn. That's my Senate district. I'm here today to testify for this legislation. Do not know where Representative Phil Barnhart is. He should be here. He's not. I'm not happy about that. But that's part of my life. And therefore, I will do the best I can with what I have before me. I'm here today to talk about this thing called sports agents. It is not the first time I have been before your committee to talk about this topic, as Senator Haas is very well aware. In fact, I introduced Senate Bill 5 during the 2011 session to deal with this subject. For a variety of reasons, some more interesting than others, I did not push for the passage of the bill. In fact, I pushed to kill the bill not once but twice. You do understand what I just said. I introduce a bill and I kill my own bill twice. But I knew I would return. By the way, I did introduce the bill on behalf of the University of Oregon, specifically their football program, but the bill, I want you to understand, it does not apply just to the University of Oregon. Do you understand that, University of Washington? It applies to the institution of higher learning state, I hope, to the young people of our state. So I just want to make sure that while the University of Oregon asked for the bill to produce, it could apply to Oregon State or Portland State, just so you know. And what are you all waving at?
Barnhart. Your cohort is coming in.
Your co-sponsor's here.
I just motioned in that Representative Barnhart could come up and sit with you.
Mr. President.
And he needs to apologize to you for being late.
Yes. But where's your testimony? I'm not through talking. No, I'm not through talking. But I knew I would return. There are numerous reports of how unethical sports agents can exploit young student athletes. With the success of our state's various athletic programs, there is little doubt that some of our young people are being targeted. I'm not saying that all sports agents are unscrupulous or looking to take advantage of kids. I am saying that those who are unscrupulous and a real threat to unsuspecting young athletes. Illicit contact with agents can have big repercussions. The NCAA will rule student-athletes ineligible to compete. This is embarrassing for the student, very embarrassing, and it can ruin their careers. Oregon needs to send a message. My state needs to send a message to these agents. Agents who attempt to take advantage of our student-athletes are not welcome in this state. Therefore, I have worked with Representative Phil Barnhart on House Bill 3296. He will speak in more detail about the bill. But I would emphasize that a key component of this bill is putting violations under the Uniform Trade Practices Act. This will significantly improve enforcement of our laws and discourage the activities of unethical athletic agents. Thank you for publicly hearing House Bill 3296, and I hope you find it worthy to hold a work session. Thank you, Chair Haas and members.
Thank you, Senator Courtney, for your remarks. If you could just stand by. Representative Barnhart, welcome. We've already heard from Jeff Hawkins of the University of Oregon, and appreciate your testimony.
Well, that's wonderful, Mr. Chair. My name is Phil Barnhart, State Representative from House District 11 in Central Lane and Linn Counties. This bill first came to my attention as a result of the good work that that President Courtney had already done on this topic over a number of sessions. I became aware of it because it was in the Rules Committee in 2011 in the House. It had some problems with the technical aspects of the bill. The House nonetheless passed it unanimously, sent it to the Senate, but it was right at the end of the session and you couldn't get it out. Hopefully it's early enough this time. We believe that we have dealt with all of those technical problems with notice issues about who to notify and how it's to be done, the issues that President Courtney just referred to having to do with the penalties that are involved for people violating these rules. I don't think I need to add to what he's already said about the need for this bill. I think it's quite clear and quite obvious, and I would simply join with him in urging the committee to hold a work session, send the bill to the floor and pass it, send it to the governor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm willing to answer any questions you might have.
Yes. Senator Beyer, did you want to address your question to these two?
No, I'm fine.
Okay, well, there's definitely a demand. We heard before you entered from athletic director that 82% of the team thinks that they're going to play in the pros, and only 2% do. Mm. So there was a market out there. Senator Roblin.
Yeah, thank you. And I will ask Senator Beyer's question. It had to do with the unified trade, the ability we have to use it. How does that work in this situation to give us the ability to take these people to court? I'm doing it because I'm, you know, your lawyer part of you.
Well, if Chair has Senator Roblin, I want you to note Section 8 of the bill, which includes the entire section of the items which are unlawful practices, and we get all the way over to VVV, right, which includes violations of this section, and it would be enforced in the usual way that unfair trade practices are enforced. One of the reasons for using this mechanism rather than a criminal statute or something else is the fiscal. We can keep the fiscal down because this gives the Attorney General a right to take action through her discretion rather than in a mandatory manner. When you have a case like the one that recently came up in one of the Carolinas, you can be sure that the Attorney General will take action because it's notorious, very public, and very upsetting to a lot of people when that happens. The problem with the law that we have now is that there's no enforcement mechanism at all. You can't do it. With this enforcement mechanism, we can get the bad actors out of the state. We use the mechanisms that are available to the AG for enforcement, and I believe there's a civil enforcement available under this section as well. You've asked me a question where the details, I just simply don't know.
Senator Beyer.
I was going to do a follow-up.
I'm sorry. Follow-up.
As a math person, I just want to acknowledge the fact that it was obviously you selected the good Senate president because both of you are from District 11. That was a unique situation here.
Don't try to be friendly with me.
Senator Beyer, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beyer, just follow up on that.
Yeah.
You've obviously thought about this more. Do you think that there is a right of a private right of action?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I'm going to defer that to LC to answer that question. If there is, it's because it's in the general statute involving unfair trade practices.
The question that I asked before you got here was under the Uniform Trade Practices Act. You have to establish a pattern of enforcement, and how you would establish the pattern. I'm thinking of these, and maybe I'm missing it, that these are single acts that were probably coming up, the North Carolina example. How would you get to the pattern? And would the pattern have to be demonstrated just in Oregon, or would it be a pattern of practice in a number of states?
Mr. Chair, Senator Beyer, I cannot answer that question.
Okay.
Representative Whitson, you have some remarks. Unfortunately,
Mr. Chair,
this away, so.
I'll just say I'm here. It's a good bill. I appreciate working with Phil. Representative Barnhart did most of the work, and I'm glad to see the president.
Start out with your ID, Representative.
Listening to House District 53, and I had nothing to do with what happened in North Carolina. But I am a big sports fan, and I think this is a bill that will address something that could endanger a young person's possibility to go to school, have a scholarship, because there's a lot of people out there who will do a lot of things for money.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, I'm just trying to follow how this would work aside from a pattern. I'm assuming, okay, these are the steps you have to follow. If somebody at a school observes something that's out of bounds, at that point they would have to give notice to the Attorney General, and then the Attorney General has discretion to act or not act at this point. And I think that maybe gets into the pattern thing.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, that is my understanding of how this works. I would have preferred a more robust enforcement mechanism, but I'm very mindful of the fact that this bill would then have had to go to Ways and Means, where there's a whole lot of other issues that are involved. I would say this, If this is if this turns out to be inadequate to deal with the issue, then I think we will be right back here with a stronger bill.
I'll follow, Ms. Chair. And just based on what Senator Beyer says, I mean, if the Uniform Trade Practices Act requires a pattern, then a one occurrence wouldn't necessarily trigger, and I would certainly want a one occurrence to trigger. I do, and Mr. President Courtney, you're a lawyer. Maybe you can help fill this in.
Chair, I really think that you're going to have to. Your questions are getting very technical. We need the legislative council or the individuals behind me to talk to this. It's my understanding that the hope here is that it's enough of a chilling effect to stop them coming in from the states. If it doesn't work, you're going to have to go to criminal. You'll end up in a judiciary committee versus this committee. I'm just going to tell you that right here and now. That's part of it. Another thing about the Uniform Trade Practices, you can move much quicker. Then that's another thing, much quicker, because you do understand time is of essence here. I mean, these individuals come in the state, and by the time you catch up with them, they can do a lot of contacts. And I know we constantly think about football, but you do understand we're talking about a lot of other sports here that are involved. You can bring baseball into this. You can bring basketball into this. You can bring football. You could even bring track and field into this. I mean, because even there's money being involved in high. So please understand. There's also the issue of people that aren't in high school yet. And I won't tell you, actually, you're being nice. This issue of young people that aren't even in high school, that is not being mentioned here. Right. Because you know now more and more, as you've heard, I understand already certain individuals in the 7th and 8th grade have been identified in certain southern states, yep, and have already been approached by certain famous southern football coaches about coming there, and their parents told as much by their parents they got a full ride. So this thing is much more than just the incredible quarterback that plays for the University of Oregon or Oregon State or even Portland State. The magnitude of this, and hopefully when Oregon starts to move in this direction, these agents are very savvy individuals. Let's just stay out of the state of Oregon because their AG is right there at the border ready to jump on us, and they can move much quicker than if you have to bring in district attorneys and things like that. That's a very general answer, and you may not like it, and there's others here who can speak in much more detail, and I think the good representative, the chair who made this bill possible, the good Phil Barnhart, will tell you if it doesn't work, we're going to have to move more aggressive, because if you noticed Oregon sports, have you noticed it? We are going to now have the Olympic trials here again. This state is becoming, for its size, only 3.75 million people. When you just had a men's basketball team get in the Sweet 16. We already know about Oregon playing for the national championship in, help me here, in football. Your women's softball team down at Oregon, at the University of Oregon, is very powerful, very powerful. I could go on and on. So, and also, in soccer, let's just take soccer, a little sport of soccer. Soccer is exploding in our states. If you don't think people in soccer are not watching some of our soccer clubs, because I know what I'm talking about, and they see somebody and want to approach him, that's it too. He's really being nice. There's another reason the bill didn't get out of the Senate, and I won't go into it here. We didn't just run out of time. But I understand those things have been worked out. Those issues have been worked out with a major player in this state when it comes to sports and athletics. Much more than you wanted, much more than you needed, but the bill comes across as a simple little bill. It's not just talking about guys that play football in their last year, because you're right, who want to jump to the NFL after being a sophomore.
Yeah, if I may, I'd like to continue work on that pattern question. I've been looking at the bill. I'll note that on line 23 of page 8, it talks about violations of Section 3 of this 2013 Act. When you go to Section 3, it talks about before initiating contact with a student athlete, this is page 3, line 7, an athlete agent shall provide written notice to the athletic director of the education institution at which the student athlete is enrolled or admitted. Notice provided under this section must state that the athlete agent intends to contact a student athlete at the educational institution. And this doesn't describe a pattern. This describes an individual action.
Right.
In this case, the failure to notify. The violation is the failure to notify a student athlete.
Okay.
The athletic director of the education institution,
right,
where a student athlete is in attendance or is enrolled. So I don't think the need for a pattern of conduct applies in this instance. I am sure it does in other examples of violations of the Uniform Trade Practices Act. There are, well, VV times 26, whatever, 3 times 26, almost 75 of these different things that are, many of them very different than this, and that do, in fact, require pattern of conduct in order to find the violation. This one simply refers to an individual violation of Section 3.
Okay.
Representative, could you explain how the jurisdictional issue would work here, because so many of these students and agents or sports agents are outside of Oregon?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I may, I note that Mark Mayer is here from LC, and he's going to answer some of these questions that we've been asking. Yeah. And I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ask you to repeat the question.
The jurisdictional issues of state law dealing with students and their representatives outside of Oregon.
That's another great question. This law applies in Oregon. It would apply to a student who is enrolled or admitted to an Oregon educational institution, because that's what the bill says. And it does require notice to the person who is designated in the bill as the athletic director.
Okay.
So you do understand that this bill is brought to you not by us. It's brought by these institutions.
Correct.
Who are struggling with these agents. They cannot keep track of all their players in terms of make sure they're doing what they need to do. That is not a pejorative remark about those athletes. They are having trouble with these agents getting into all around the place, if you know what I mean. And they're asking for significant help so that they can say something to the world. So please understand the genesis of this bill. This isn't state senator, state rep trying to be heroes. Your University of Oregon, among others, are saying, can you please help us? These agents are really a major problem for us with our athletes. And so I hope that is very significant. They're asking for help because if they're not careful, they're going to end up with games with half their team ineligible, not to mention the embarrassment to the students, et cetera, because the NCAA will rule them ineligible. And that can affect their careers and everything else. So I just say that because it's very important to get this kind of legislation from something as powerful as the University of Oregon Athletic Program saying, we need help. We need help. I'm sorry we can't answer the question. They're very incredible. You guys are all the men and women, you're all lawyers, it seems to me, or if you didn't, you don't even need to go to law school. You should be just given juris doctorates. And so with that, we'll give the legislative council an answer to all these questions, I hope, in a way that you'll be comfortable with.
Mr. President, I've actually asked, as many years I've been on Judiciary Committee, if I'm qualified to sit for the bar, and they tell me no.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry about that. If I were on the Board of Bar Governors, I'd talk about it.
Thank you, gentlemen. Ms. Ball, did you want to take a swing at some of these questions before we do that? We do have legislative counsel here, but I just didn't know if you, University of Oregon, wanted to take a swing at some of these.
You know, I will let legislative counsel speak to that.
Okay. Mark, how are you today? How are you?
Chair Haas, Vice Chair Canope, and members of the committee. I'm Mark Mayer, Legislative Counsel. So you had some questions about the UTPA applicability to the Act. Is that correct?
Yeah. You want to restate your question, Senator Roblin?
Yeah, or I could bet. It has to do with the application of the code with mm-hmm. regard to these acts. And the extended part of it has to do with, in most of those cases, there has to be a pattern developed before you can actually bring a charge. And we're trying to figure out how does that allow us and our Attorney General to go after an individual event by an agent and a player.
It's been a while since I've looked at this part of the bill, so if you give me just a moment to sure. take a look at how that reference works with Section 3 as well as the other amended sections. Thanks. Right. So when I look at Section 3, I see it providing or requiring provision of clear notice. So the way that the reference in the UTPA works with Section 3 is that if provision of clear notice is not provided, that individual instance is an unlawful trade practice.
Okay.
Okay. Did you want clarification with how it interacts with the other sections?
Yes.
All right. So probably the most significant interaction between the UTPA and the athlete agent series that we're looking at is violation of ORS 702.12, which sets forth basically a list of criteria. And the way I would read that is that any individual instance in which individual criteria is violated underneath the athlete agent series, that can be considered an unlawful trade practice as well. So,
how about the? We'll just stay on the subject until it's exhausted. Do you have another question on that?
No,
I'm okay there.
That's pretty good.
We touched upon the jurisdictional issue. Some of these sports agent types are, I would say, from Texas. Recruits or students that play from Oregon or from those states, how would this apply in those situations?
I think that one of the things that this bill tried to do is clarify through the definitions the application of basically the act to people. It's going to take me just a moment to recall that. Right. If you look at student athlete on page 2 of the bill, which is subsection 13 of ORS 702.005, it defines a student athlete as meaning an individual attending an educational institution within this state. So that was an attempt to say that the interactions between athlete agents, which may not be from within this state, right, as long as they're interacting with students who are within the states, they are going to be subject to the regulation. So that was the clarification we were trying to add. They have to be attending an institution within this state.
So the if they are attending an institution in this state, but the person is from Texas, the attorney generals could still go after that person the same way he goes after somebody who's making mercury thermometers or something. Yes?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Senator Roebuck.
Along that line, they were talking about younger athletes would also be affected. So they could be in high school.
Yes.
And this would still apply as long as it was an Oregon high school.
Yes.
But the athletes that come from outside, we wouldn't be able to prosecute for actions that took place in Texas before they got here. Once they became an athlete, that's when it would take place for us.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
That's very helpful. Any questions? Okay. Ms. Ball?
I think that you did a great job answering. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions?
No, but we very much appreciate
you very
clarifying
much.
This. Yep. We have a great team in our Legislative Council office.
Thank you, Chair Hass and Vice Chair Knopp, members of the board.
All right. I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 3296. We're going to let it breathe for a while before taking any action on there. We are going to carry it over. And we have no other business before us. Thank you, committee. We are adjourned.